This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have here as guests, once again, Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. For a long, long time now, he's been sort of our resident auto mechanic, stopping by here several times a year to answer questions. We do this thing where we say to people, okay, you've got a problem with your car, tell us what kind of car it is and give the best description that you can, and Rick will suggest a solution for you. Also, we have tried to talk generally about maintenance and some kind of things that you want to think about all year round or maybe at particular times. So whatever questions you have, car questions, give us a call, and Rick will do his best to help you out. 333-9455, that's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that too. And the address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Thanks very much for being here. Well, I have a question that we can do right away because of something that came in by email a little bit before the program. And here is the question. Someone writes in, they have a 2001 Honda Accord LX automatic. For a while now, it's been having problems shifting at low speeds. For instance, when stopped or slowing down and speeding up again, shifting lags or it shifts hard into the next gear. At higher speeds, over 40, there seems to be no problem. Other than that, the car runs well. Sometimes it still does this even if driving easy, but if I need to slow or stop and pick up speed quickly, it almost always does this. What do you think?
Well, do they say in there how many miles are on the car?
They do not.
Okay.
It's just that it's a 2001.
Right. Well, transmission fluid would be the first thing to check. Fluid level and condition. It should be red in color. If it's brown or smells burnt, then there's internal issues. So first I would suggest changing the fluid. When you talk about shifting harsh, you know, the other thing that comes to mind, if it's worse when you accelerate harder, that maybe the engine mounts, transmission mounts, front mount and rear mount should be looked at, because if the engine's rocking too much, it could be kind of a harsh feel when it shifts. You'd probably also notice that if you're just simply sitting still and you go from reverse to drive and drive to reverse, it'd be like a clunk. So those would be the two things to start with.
Okay. Also, the caller just was kind of wondering what you think about Pirelli P4 all-season tires as far as how they will wear and how they will handle wet, slick, snow-covered roads. Apparently, their mechanic favors that particular brand.
Well, we don't sell tires, so my suggestion is to go to TireRack.com, and you can read reviews there. Generally, all-season tires typically are noisier at highway speeds. So that may be a consideration. Or you can just simply give them a call and discuss the priorities of your tire selection, and they'll be more than happy to direct you in the right way.
Okay. We hope that that helps. We have some folks here on the phone we'd like to talk with, starting with a caller in Urbana. Line number one.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a Subaru 2004 Forester with 80,000 miles. About a year ago, when I pressed down on the accelerator and went at slow speed, it began to go kind of a little growling sound. I took it into Midas. They said it's not the exhaust system. I took it to the dealer. They checked the car over. They thought there's an ornamental piece at the end of the tailpipe. They thought maybe that was vibrating. They took that off, and it's still doing it. Again, I only hear it when I've got the accelerator down. It sounds like something is vibrating, something loose, making some of that little growling sound, but nobody can find it. Nobody can give me an explanation as to why it does that. It works fine. I mean, the cars, I take it on long trips and it works fine.
Mm-hmm. Does it make any difference whether the engine is warm or cold?
Not really, no.
But does it come from the front of the car?
That is not easy for me to say. I don't know where it's coming from.
Oh, okay. is usually when it comes from the front, where the header pipes, which is part of the exhaust system, come down from the cylinder heads and then curve toward the back of the car. They have perimeter metal plates that surround those pipes. And sometimes the spot welds or even the plate where they attach, it's like an upper plate and a lower plate. And sometimes they come separated, and sometimes they'll actually grow in terms of the clearance between the outside diameter of the exhaust pipe and the inside diameter of those cover shields. And typically when the car's up in the air, you can tap on those and duplicate it. Is it when you first touch the pedal that you hear it?
No, it's when I continue accelerating. Then if I let up on the accelerator, it stops.
I see. Okay.
Now, there might be one other clue, which is they had cut off the heat shield, some of the heat shield.
Okay. Yeah, that's the direction I was mentioning. That's a typical problem with those cars. And a lot of times people remove them. Sometimes we weld them back in place or weld them to the pipe. I would have someone take a look at those front heat shields a little more closely. And then also tap on the catalytic converter with like a rubber hammer.
Right, front heat shield.
And then tap on the catalytic converter.
And tap on catalytic converter. Okay.
You don't hear this noise. Or can you duplicate this noise if you just rev it up in park?
If I rev it up in park, I haven't tried that.
I see. Okay.
Would that make a difference?
Well, that would further narrow it down to looking at the heat shields.
Uh-huh. Now, as they say, how many heat shields does the car have?
I believe there's four on the front, probably six.
Okay. So I don't know how many were cut off. Would that make a difference?
No. Just have them focus in on that area.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Very good. I hope that helps. We will go on to another caller in Indiana. This next person is on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Hello. Received a car through the death of the family, and the family met, and we decided it's going to go to two of the younger boys in the family who have transportation but like to diddle around on cars. I took it to a maintenance shop that I've been going to for years, and they worked on the car for a period of time, I guess, to have a safety check. It turns out the power steering is leaking, and also with the rack and pinion. And they said, you can take care of that pretty easily, just keeping things full. And my question there is, how far can you play with that in terms of these two boys driving this thing? Is it sort of thing that if it goes down, say a quarter of an inch, we're in trouble, or is there a lot of, in a sense, play to take? Second question deals with the rear end. They said that needs new struts, but there was no reason to really put them in because the iron piece that's attached to the chassis where the struts would attach, all that's rusted out pretty much, and they're afraid that they'll do something and all of a sudden there will be no connection at all to the body chassis itself. That seemed fairly bad to me, but I wanted to get a second opinion. That's who's I was calling you.
What kind of car
Third
is it?
Thing is, is warped rotors. Now, I'm pretty sure that's just a simple turning on the somebody turns the thing down to a certain level and then you're all right. But there's the place where you can't go anywhere past that, and that's the other question. And it seems to me this is getting to the place where these young kids who've done work but don't have, a computer deal set up and hook into things may be past their stage, and I just wonder if you have an opinion on that.
What kind of car is it?
It's a 96, the 96 Oldsmobile. Runs very, very well. It's been kept up. The aunt who had it, when it said 3,000 miles, it went in to get an oil change and the whole lube and all that sort of stuff. So other than the things I've talked about, it's in very good shape.
Well, as far as the power steering leak is concerned, they are correct. I'm sure they gave you an estimate. And a lot of times rack and pinion is a pretty expensive repair.
Yeah.
Fluid.
So that's what they said. They wanted to say, you ought to consider getting rid of this car, junking it or something. So if we fixed everything that's really wrong with it, he says, you might as well go out and look for another used car, you know. So that's the dilly-dally part right now, is whether we should, the kids think they're getting the car, and I'm a little concerned about the safety aspects of the things I mentioned about. I'm presuming that you have less braking power with a rotor that's warped, because the disc wouldn't be attached to it, you know, face-to-face at all times.
Is this going to be an in-town car?
Yeah, and definitely now, yeah.
Okay.
Since I found out, I don't let it go anywhere outside the city.
I see. Well, as far as the power steering is concerned with regards to safety, let's just let's kind of address safety. Okay. When the power steering level gets low, the power steering pump is going to make a noise. It's going to make a whining noise that's going to change as you turn the wheel.
Right.
So you could just simply let the boys know, when you hear the noise, let me know, and we'll top off the fluid. And you can kind of keep an eye on if the frequency of adding fluid increases, and then you may have to address the steering.
Right.
That's going to be a thing that will happen first. So we'll have a noise. They're not going to lose steering.
Okay.
Unless they keep driving it and driving it and driving it, and it finally runs out of fluid, and then it will get hard to turn.
Yeah.
The other thing that would be worthwhile with them from an educational standpoint is to simply sit in the car, turn the key on, don't start the engine, and just say, try to turn the steering wheel, so that they know what it feels like when there's no power steering.
Ah.
They can still turn the wheel, but it's going to be really hard.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So then they know, okay, this is the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as the rear end is concerned with regards to struts, struts are, I'm sure you know, they're like shock absorbers.
Yeah.
They minimize the bouncing of the car. So if you go to the back of the car and you put your knee on the bumper or your hands on the trunk, whichever is easiest, and push down on the car as hard as you can 3 times.
Yeah.
Let it bounce and then release it. Count the number of times it continues to bounce.
Okay.
If it bounces more than 3 times, then it needs shocks or struts.
Okay.
All that does is it keeps the tire in contact with the road.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as the rotors are concerned, it's probably the front rotors they're making reference to, that when you lightly touch the brake pedal, you feel in the bottom of your foot a little bit of movement up and down, or you may even feel it in the steering wheel left to right, left to right.
Yeah.
Okay. Rotors are cheap. They're a safety issue. I would replace them. I wouldn't machine them.
Okay.
Just replace them. It's going to cost more to machine them than it is to replace them.
Okay. Good.
And then
thanks a lot.
And then I would also show them how to check oil, you know, the basic things.
Yeah.
Get them a little more familiar with the car.
Yeah. You know, they're at that stage now where it's really important to do the talk.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. That'll give me some backup my family the next time.
Like with all my kids, part of the deal was when I got their first cars, they were going to do the oil changes, and you know, I taught them how to do that, and they do it. So,
okay. Well, thanks a lot. Man.
Sure.
Okay, very good. Bye. Rick Karch is our guest from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Occasionally, he's here on the program. We talk about car care, and if you have a question about your car, some problem, not sure what's going on, call in. Tell us about it. Tell us what kind of car it is. Describe the problem, and Rick will see if he can help you out. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. So anywhere you can hear us, use that one. And if you'd like to send an email, well, you can do that too. will-talk@illinois.edu. Just what we're talking about, fluids here, at the risk of sounding like someone's tedious grandpa, I'm thinking it's worth getting in a plug for one fluid that I bet a lot of people don't think about until they realize they don't have any, and that's the window washer fluid.
Yep.
And in the wintertime, you know, that might be a good thing to make sure that you've got plenty of fluid in your reservoir there.
Yeah, a lot of cars will have a light that'll come on, low washer light. Windshield washer fluid, there's lots of them out there. Generally, all of them are protected to 20 below when you buy them. So usually a good idea, buy it, put the remainder of it in the trunk so you've got it. And then sometimes you'll notice that when you do operate the washers, maybe they don't work. Maybe it's a bad pump. Typically what happens is one side will work and the other side won't. And it seems like usually it's the driver's side that doesn't work. And a lot of times the little holes in the nozzles will get wax in there. And sometimes you can just take like a little safety pin and then insert it in that, and then operate it and insert it again, and it'll eventually, typically, they eventually will clean up.
Yeah. So what, now I'm prompted to ask, now you mentioned wax. I'm sure that's because people have gone through car washes where the entire car has been sprayed with wax. Do you think that that is actually not a good thing?
No, that's a good thing.
That's okay.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, that's, you definitely want wax on the car.
Because I also have heard people say, well, the problem with that, putting on wax that way also is it gets on the windows and it can build up on your windows.
I'm not so sure how much wax really comes out of those machines when they do that. I think the best thing to do is if you wash your own car is the soap that you buy. You buy a product that has wax in it.
Yeah, okay.
And that works quite well. Mm. So you're kind of doing both at the same time.
Yeah. And that's good for protecting the finish of the car.
Yes. Yes.
I suppose particularly in the wintertime as we're throwing a lot of salt around.
Yes, which we will get.
Yeah. One of these days. All right. Belgium is our next caller here. Line number 4. Let's talk with them. Hello.
Hello and good morning to you both. Mm-hmm. Am I the only person in the world that realizes they're not going to be making manual transmissions anymore? Because you look for a truck. I have an old pickup truck. It's close to being worn completely out from working for many years. Looking for a new truck. Now, obviously, I could look for a used one, but I thought I'd look for a new one. And it's very hard to find a stick shift anymore. Especially, in a smaller, the compact, small trucks, which is what I care for. You can find automatics all the time, but stick shifts, they don't seem to like to build them anymore.
No, they're not very popular.
People don't want them. That's why they're not making them.
Oh, but there's so much better gas mileage, and it just feels better to use a stick shift.
Well, I think you'll just have to keep looking. I'm sure you'll find one.
Yeah.
They're out there.
But they don't make near as many as they used to, do they?
Well, it's what people order. Yeah. Or, as you know, dealers will just order vehicles to have on the lot, and they're not going to order a manual transmission unless somebody specifically wants one.
So I just have to force them to order one for me and put up the money up front or whatever and go that way if I want one, huh?
Correct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, now that the caller says, I'm sympathetic, but now the caller talks about it's this thing, and, you've heard it for such a long time that there's you get better gas mileage if you're shifting yourself than if you have an automatic transmission. Now, I think also that I've heard you say more than once, you think, well, actually, with today's transmission designs, that's not so much true.
No, I don't. Unless you, what I refer to as short shift, or shift very soon, meaning at a lower RPM, it's all driving characteristics. The transmission does it for you. So it's kind of hard to beat an automatic in terms of mileage. So a lot of these new cars will have 6, even 7 speed transmissions.
Yeah.
So, they get up to highway speeds. And, it's pretty easy to figure out when you're at the highway if you're going 65 mile an hour and you have a tachometer on the dash and it's turning 3,500 RPM, you're not going to get very good mileage. But these newer automatic transmissions, it'll be clear down to almost 2,000 RPM at those speeds. So the mileage is obviously greater because you don't have your foot down as far on the accelerator. And a lot of transmissions automatic will have buttons as to how they shift.
Yeah.
Maybe like an econ button, a sport button.
Yeah.
Those type of things.
Yeah, I know they. I know I have one like that, and the only thing they say is, well, you like the sport button, cool, but you will not get the mileage with that setting that you will with either the normal or economy
setting. That's right, because in the sport button, it's going to shift at higher RPMs because it's more of a performance that way, as far as acceleration being quicker.
Yeah, I haven't tried to see what it was like. In the sport mode. Maybe sometime I should just put it on there just to see what exactly the difference is.
Yeah, you'll notice a difference.
Yeah, okay. We have some callers here, and we'll keep going and take questions here for Rick Karch. You had a car care question. Give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's somebody in Rossville, line 1. Hello.
Hello. I have a 74 Chevy 3/4 ton pickup truck. It has a 350 engine in it. Runs, starts beautifully. It's a dream, except for the fact that it burns oil like mad. Is there, I don't have much hope, but is there anything I can do that doesn't cost a fortune to improve that heavier oil or something like that?
Well, got a lot of miles on it?
Probably.
So in other words, the odometer doesn't work?
Right.
Okay. Have you noticed anything out the tailpipe? When we're talking about oil consumption, it's going to be blue in color.
Okay. It doesn't get as far as a tailpipe, but when I start it up, there is smoke coming from underneath the thing.
Okay, so there's probably exhaust leaks.
Undoubtedly, yes.
Okay, all right.
The thing is, you know, it's a very old truck.
Yeah, I understand. So, well, what I'm getting at is, to better answer the question of consumption, are we talking about more than a quart a 1,000 miles?
Yes.
Okay. All right. If we have blue...
I have looked for leaks, by the way, and there, you know, I couldn't find any, so I'm afraid it's just burning the stuff.
It probably is. But it still idles okay?
Idles okay. You turn the key when it's sitting for a few months and it starts just like that. It'd be an ideal thing except for, you know, that. And I don't know if I should put money in the thing to fix it up, you know, value-wise. Probably not.
Probably not. But as far as oil consumption is concerned, if you start the vehicle in the morning and there's blue smoke or you smell oil, it's valve stem seals. And on the Chevy, they use a square-cut valve stem seal that gets quite brittle. So what happens is the oil, by gravity, goes past the valve stem and the valve guide and gets into the cylinder. And then when you start the car, there's oil in there. So it'll start and has to burn that oil, so of course you'll smell it. The other way it can consume oil is by the piston rings under hard acceleration. If you have blue smoke under hard acceleration, it's going past the piston rings.
Okay.
Now, in your case, it may not be very easy to do either of those. So the next thing to do would be to take it in and have a compression and a cylinder leakage test done.
Okay.
The cylinder leakage numbers that you're looking for are less than 20%. If they're above 20%, then you know it's going by the rings.
Okay.
So you could just put valve stem seals in it. And usually what I do when I do them, I use the square cut seal that General Motors uses, but I also use an umbrella type valve stem seal, which you typically find in a Ford product. And that helps quite a bit. The reason I ask about the way it idles is that if it's valve stem seals, typically every year or so, or maybe even sooner, a spark plug will get oil fouled. And then the car will run rough, and you'll take it in, and they'll say, okay, we just put a set of plugs in it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound familiar?
No.
Okay.
As far as operating is concerned, it runs like a charm.
Okay. All right.
You know, usually I just run it at slow speeds, but a couple times I've taken it, you know, on the highway, and it just performs like a dream.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great engine. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So that would be my suggestion. And then you know, you're probably going to spend a couple hours of labor to do those two tests.
Okay.
And then at least you'll have some sense of direction.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
You're welcome.
Very good. We're talking this morning with Rick Karch, auto mechanic from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's here occasionally on the show to talk about cars. And if you have a problem, again, you can just call in and tell us about it. Tell us what kind of car it is and tell us what the problem is. And Rick will see if he can help you out. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You have always talked about the importance of regular maintenance and looking at the manual for the car and doing whatever it is that the manufacturers suggest at those intervals, checking or replacing fluids, filters, you know, that kind of stuff. One thing I'm curious about is that people used to talk about, maybe people still talk about tune-ups. What today, what does it tune-up mean? Does that mean anything?
No, it really doesn't.
No, okay.
probably 15 years ago, I quit using that word. And I refer to it as a performance check and adjustment. Okay. There isn't anything to tune up anymore. In other words, the days of breaker points are gone. Carburetors are gone. Things that you can adjust or fiddle with no longer exist. The computer does all the adjustments for you. It makes the decisions. And it makes the decisions based on proper components. So, for example, we have a check engine light on most all cars now. Check engine light can come on. It's kind of a misnomer light. A lot of times people will say, well, I checked the oil, I checked the water. Well, that doesn't mean any of those things. The computer doesn't know anything about coolant level. It doesn't know anything about the oil level. And what it's looking at is all the different sensors that the computer uses to make fuel delivery adjustments or changes. If the check engine light is on, there's a problem with one of those sensors. If the check engine light is on and flashing, you shouldn't be driving the car. You need to make an appointment as soon as possible, because then when the light is flashing, the car is also running rough, either at idle or when you accelerate, it's not smooth. And that's the check engine light needs to be addressed. If you just say, well, we checked it 2 years ago and they said it was this and it cost this much to deal with it, so I just didn't worry about it. Well, the light, it's already on, so if something else happens, you really don't know what's happening. And it could be a case where maybe it's a sensor related to the ignition system that may leave you stranded somewhere. So the lights need to be addressed and checked.
Okay. So if the light comes on, pay attention to it.
Yes,
but
you really
and if it's flashing, you really pay attention to it.
Yeah, if it's flashing. And as you mentioned, the maintenance, yes. The owner's manual will display in terms of months and mileage what services need to be performed. And you should follow that. Yeah.
Rick Karch is here. We're taking questions on car care. We have some others. We'll talk some more in just a moment after a short break. This is Focus.
Hey, how'd you like to help this radio station and spiff up your driveway at the same time?
What are we doing? Going into the paving business once again?
No, it's Car Talk's new vehicle donation program where you donate a car. The proceeds benefit this station, and you tuck it to the IRS at the same time.
Hat trick!
And you can do it all on the web.
To learn more, call 866-789-8627.
And this is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week. Tomorrow morning on the program, we will be talking in hour number one with journalist Siddhartha Deb. This was a show we were going to do a week or so ago, talking with him about a book that he's written about life in contemporary India. The title of the book is The Beautiful and the Damned, A Portrait of India, particularly concentrating on a few individuals and trying to use them to personalize the story of what is going on in India today. It should be an interesting conversation. That's the first hour. Hour two, we'll talk with journalist Julius Shiras, who's written a book about Jonestown. The title of the book is A Thousand Lives. And what it tries to do is take a look at some of the people who were followers of Jim Jones and were involved in the People's Temple. And what was it that drew them to him and to the temple, and to try to get a better understanding of what happened there at Jonestown. So she'll be talking with us in hour number two. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week, and we always welcome your questions, comments. You can check the schedule by going to our website, which is willill.illinois.edu. In this hour, the guest is Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign, and we're taking questions on cars and car care. We have several people here ready to go. If you've got a problem, you can call in and talk with Rick about it, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We'll start in again with somebody in Champaign. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question for Rick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I have a Subaru Outback, a Legacy Outback. It's an older car, probably about a 98, I think, or 97. And lately when I've been, I drive very infrequently. I take the bus or I walk. But lately when I've been trying to start it, sometimes I'll turn the key and nothing will happen. And then if I just kind of maybe try it again or another time, it'll start right up. So what I've done is I've taken off the clamps on the battery post and just cleaned, because they were really dirty. And it seems to be starting, I've only driven it a couple times, but it seems to have started up each time after that. So I'm wondering, is that likely, was that the problem, or is there something else I should probably have checked out?
More than likely, that's all it is. How old's the battery?
That I don't know, although I'd say it's probably pretty old.
More than 5 years?
Yeah, I think. Okay. I really don't remember.
I would just change it.
Just change out the battery?
Every 5 years.
Okay.
But you did the right thing as far as cleaning the posts. Do you use baking soda and a brush, or how'd you do it?
You know, I really didn't get that technical. I just kind of knocked all the stuff off of there and tightened it back on.
Yeah.
You know, I got it to where it looked clean.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have stuff on it.
Well, the part that needs to be clean is the part you can't see, which is where the cable actually attaches to the post.
Okay, so if I took the cable off, though?
Yeah, and then clean it with a wire brush. But if you're going to replace the battery, you just do it at the same time.
Okay.
They make a brush that fits in there. It's kind of like a round wire brush.
Uh-huh.
And it cleans the inside of the battery terminal ends.
Oh, okay.
But generally, when you have a, let's just say it was a starter problem. If it was a starter problem, when you turn the key, all you would hear would be a click.
Yeah.
A single click. That's usually a starter problem. And then you keep trying it and trying it and trying it, and finally it'll start. But Subarus are pretty good starters. They typically don't fail. So I'd say you're in the right direction.
Okay. Well, I'll stick with that for now. And I have heard that click, so I'll keep that in mind, too.
Okay.
But, all right.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Thank you. On to Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've got a 95 Buick Century, and the red light comes on, says check engine, and they always tell me it's an ERG. I had that cleaned out once, but it's still coming back. Is there anything I can put through the engine, or can we replace this, or what?
No, there's no additives that are going to correct that. Do you remember exactly what you're referring to? Is exhaust gas recirculation valve, and there's components that control the valve. I can't remember in 95 if they actually have a sensor that monitors the pressure in the exhaust to verify that it actually is flowing. The newer cars do, and they'll have, you can have a series of different codes for EGR. Depending on what the specific code is, cleaning may not resolve it unless there's actually issues with the passageways in the cylinder head or the intake manifold, depending on how it flows. I would have it checked again.
Well, I had it cleaned out, and well, it's been 08, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
No, 10, back in 10. And now it's, the light's coming back on and off, and sometimes when he's got his tester on there, he says, I cleared it out. Well, it'll last for a little while, and then comes back on.
Yeah, clearing codes doesn't really fix anything. It just simply turns the light out temporarily, like you mentioned. But it's definitely the same exhaust gas recirculation code, related code, I should say.
Well, I don't know what the code is.
Okay. It may not be the same one. It may be an oxygen sensor. Oxygen sensor related check engine lights typically come on more so at highway speeds.
Okay, then. I thank you kindly.
You're welcome.
All right, very good. Well, we'll go on here and talk with someone next in Aurora, line number 2. Hello?
Yes, this is not my question, but when you were talking to the guy about the Subaru, what cars do you find are the most reliable, or, you know, that they last a long time as far as the parts and such? What cars do you find are the most easiest for shady tree mechanics to work on nowadays?
Hondas and Toyotas.
For both of my questions?
Yes.
Really? Okay. My question was, I have a Chevy S10 with a 2.2-liter engine in it, And I was just wondering, as far as the belt idler, a water pump, and like the hoses, what the hoses look good, but I was just wondering if there's kind of a rule of thumb of when you should change them.
Well, the hose manufacturers say there is, but it gets pretty expensive. If you price every hose under the hood there, mm-hmm. you know, you can get over $200, $300 just in hoses. So generally, as long as they're soft, they're not spongy or not resilient, I guess is a better way to explain it. I wouldn't be too concerned about them, and visually look at them for cracks, of course. As far as the serpentine belt is concerned, since it's a singular belt, if there's any significant cracks in it, it just needs to be replaced.
Okay.
As far as the tensioner is concerned, as long as the belt is running true as you look at it while the engine is idling, in other words, it doesn't move to the left, to the right, and you don't hear any squealing noise like when you turn the air conditioning on, that's usually a good indication that the tensioner is okay. Mm-hmm. So, anything else?
Well, I mentioned about the water pump. I have 131,000 miles. It still has the original water pump on it yet, and I just put a new alternator on it here, and as you know, well know, GM sure made a mess of that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, when I had to head all the stuff out to get to the alternator, I was thinking maybe I should have replaced the water pump just as a precautionary, and I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
As far as the water pump is concerned, they typically, in the beginning, when they leak, only leak when the engine is shut off. And it comes out what's referred to as a weep hole.
Right.
There's a weep hole at the bottom of the water pump near the pulley. And if you take a mirror and look at that weep hole, and if you see what looks like a waterfall, mm-hmm. which means it's just evidence that it has been seeping a little bit, and it'll leave a trail. There may not actually be fresh fluid there, meaning liquid in form, but you'll see a trace or a pattern where it has flown. Then it needs to be changed.
Okay. But in your business, you don't see, like, a lot of them show up at, like, 140,000 or something that end up being a problem or anything like that.
No, the only ones that we change on a routine basis are when we do timing belts.
Oh, okay, sure.
Because a timing belt is so time-consuming to begin with. You know, some of them take anywhere from 3 to 5 hours. That for in another 20 minutes, you can replace a water pump and avoid the customer coming back in 6 months or a year and having to pay that 5 hours or 3 hours all over again to replace a water pump. So we always try to sell that at the same time. But in your case, from a mileage standpoint, no, there isn't any pattern.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you for calling. We have about 10 minutes left here with Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. If you have car questions, give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And you could send us an email if you'd rather do that. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. A couple of folks here in Champaign. Next is line 3 right here. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I am calling because I'm looking into buying a used auto. It's a 96 Ford Taurus, and he said that it had air conditioning hose. The aluminum hose or the metal hose for the air conditioning had a hole in it. Is that going to be an expensive, major expense with buying that used car?
Well, first thing to do, and kind of general advice I give to everyone, mm-hmm. is to pick up a copy of Consumer Reports, mm-hmm. and look in the section with regards to repair occurrences.
Mm-hmm.
They vary by year. They vary by engine. As a general rule, they're extremely accurate.
Okay.
So the first thing to do would be look up 1996 Taurus frequency of repairs.
Okay.
And they use circles. Are you familiar with it?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Where would I find it?
The library, if you just go to the public library.
Okay, not a problem.
Yeah, I would do that first. But as far as this air conditioning repair is concerned, my first reaction is if it wasn't expensive, he would have fixed it.
Exactly.
especially as hot as this summer was.
Mm-hmm.
And those cars also have heater core problems.
Okay.
So.
With the air conditioning system, because he had the heat rolling real high so that I could take a look at the car. But he did mention the air conditioning problem. Also, I seen a brake light come on, and he was like, well, got the brakes fixed, da-da-da-da. I'm not sure why the brake light came on and went off, so I'm just, like, kind of leery. What kind of things should I also look for?
Well, let's start at the library, and then if you're comfortable with that, then I would pay someone to check the car over.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You want a buyer's check.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for your time.
Oh, sure. Very good. Thank you. On again to another Champagne person. This is line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I have a Honda Odyssey 2004, and for about 2 years now, and I've been bringing it in to see a man occasionally, it has this noise, and the noise to me sounds, and my husband too, and it's been getting worse over the past 2 years. It sounds like a sheet of metal rubbing against another sheet of metal, although it's hard to describe the sound. It's like a zhuzhing sound. And it happens when I'm going between 30 miles per hour and 40 miles per hour. Once I get above that in the 50s and 60s, you don't hear a thing. And below is fine, too. And so if I'm driving along at between 30 and 40, I hear the zhuzh.
While you're accelerating.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's related to the exhaust.
Oh.
A heat shield, more than likely.
Yeah.
And those can be removed or repaired, whichever is easiest.
Is it an expensive?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
So if I brought it to you, you'd be able to fix it?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So it's not a big deal, and I haven't been crazy to... not ignore it. I've been trying to get someone to listen to it, but nobody seems to be able to when they're driving it, except for
right.
me and my husband.
Yeah, it's usually when the car's up in the air, you can go through the exhaust system, and a lot of times it's visual observation. Sometimes if it's an internal noise, then you have to tap or hit the exhaust components to duplicate it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, so... Is it serious if I don't get it done soon? Or
not at all, if that's what it is. Does it seem to you that it comes just to the right of your right foot?
Yep.
Okay. Then that's probably what it is.
Okay. Well, anyway, then I'll put that down on my list, and I'll get over to you in the next few months.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't serious in the car.
All right. Well, good.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well,
thanks
very much.
And I guess that does a very important question is, if you think something's going on, how do you determine whether that's a safety issue or not and something that you should get looked at right away?
Well, safety issues to me are brakes, steering. Brakes meaning when you step on the brakes, does the car slow down like it should, or does it go to the right, does it go to the left, or when you step on the brakes, does the brake pedal, like someone's tapping the bottom of your foot and the steering wheel wiggles, then that's safety oriented. As far as suspension, front end in particular, when you hit bumps on the road, do you hear noises? If you hear noises, that's safety. So no matter how poorly an engine runs, and if the check engine light is flashing, the car still has to stop, and you have to be able to steer it. So brakes and front end, noises, anything that sounds bad, usually is bad. As she mentioned, she's had this for 2 years, and the noise has gotten worse, but obviously hasn't alarmed her enough, which it probably wouldn't because it's not that significant. So... I don't know, does that answer your question?
No, yeah, that's helpful. That's good. All right. Vermilion County, here's our next caller, line number two.
Hello.
Hi. Yes.
Oh, I have a 1996 Toyota pickup truck. It's a T100 with a four-cylinder engine. But that all seems to be fine. You were just mentioning going over bumps and feeling something. Well, in the last month, it has 144,000 miles on it, I should say. And in the last month, when I get on the interstate, so it's a high-speed thing, when I hit some of those larger bumps, it feels like the car, or the truck wants to just sort of crab a little sideways. It has this little feeling to it, like it's I'm getting a little unstable over a bump.
Does it continue to bounce?
No, it doesn't bounce. It's just a one-time, and I think, boy,
now,
I don't like that motion to continue because you end up somewhere else.
Now, when this happens, do you have to correct for it with the steering wheel, or you just feel it?
I just feel it, okay. and it happens quickly enough, and then when you're on the smooth bit of the road again, there's no, I mean, it settles right down again. It's just over the bump, you know, that 1 second after you hit it, and you go.
Feels like it wants to change lanes.
Yeah.
Okay, it's from the rear.
Yes.
So for the rear of the vehicle needs to be looked at.
Okay.
The suspension in the rear.
Yes. Okay.
But I would have it looked at, yes.
We don't
have a low tire or anything like that?
No, the tires are fairly new.
Okay.
And so they are all inflated and they look good and
good
rubber. So what sort of things, is it a spring or is this?
Bushings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Very good. To another caller here, Champaign County, line number one. Hello.
Hi, I should just do this, but I thought I'd ask in case there's some known problem. I have a 98 VW new Beetle, and when the humidity is just right, and I could usually predict it, I get a misfire in cylinder C. I get it checked, and that's what it always is, and it dries out. I did the spark plugs myself. They're good wires. They're good things, but I don't know. I think I put some kind of conductive stuff in the cables. And if I just, you know, it seems to me that the thing to do is just to take them out and put some bulb grease or something inside the to improve the connection. But I was wondering if maybe there is anything known on the other end that where the spark originates or something like that could always have the same cylinder misfire due to humidity, or is it just more likely a bad contact right at the plug?
You meant cylinder 3? Is that what you... I thought I heard
yeah,
C.
Yeah.
But okay. The best thing to do is take like a windshield washer spray bottle and fill it with water and just start the vehicle and just let it idle and start spraying. Start at the spark plug, I'm number 3, which you know is, that one's a little easier to get to than 1 and 2 underneath the manifold. But and just start spraying, and as you go, realizing that you put new wires on, depending on the quality of the wire. But what you're looking for is you'll actually see you're duplicating high humidity in an intense way, and the water is a path to ground for the ignition. And you'll actually see the spark go to ground. And you'll find out exactly where it is. And that works quite well.
Ah. So, I mean, these are Bosch wires and Bosch plugs, and you think that it could actually be shorting out of a flaw in the cable?
It's very possible.
Yeah.
It's very possible.
All right, well, I hadn't considered that really, but I would think that it would just be humidity build up right in the contact at the tip of the plug.
But well, the moisture can't get there.
No, I mean at the where the wire clips onto the spark plug.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. The water can't get there.
No. Huh.
And usually, you always put a little dielectric grease on the ends before you put the plug
on.
I
remember doing that, but I'm not positive.
Okay.
All right. Well,
try a spray bottle.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Okay, we'll see if we can do one more caller here. This is somebody in Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hi, this is Lisa. I'm calling from Champaign. I have a question because I have a 2001 Ford Escape, and it's got about 100,000 miles on it, so it's you know, not pretty old. When I, like, slow down to either park or, you know, pull over, and I get almost down to being stopped, my RPMs, like, jump up, and if my foot wasn't on the brake, my car would lurch forward and, like, smack into the car in front of me. And I've had problems with it idling before, like, idling too high. And I was just wondering if you had any idea. It seems like it's fairly serious. I don't really know.
Is the check engine light on?
No.
Has it been on?
Not since... we did something to it recently, something with the... because it was idling too high, and it was going to... my emissions test was going to be weird, so they... something with the catalytic converter. Does that sound right?
No. Not with regards to idle. Maybe idle speed motor, maybe? Cleaning?
Would you just suggest that I bring it in?
Well, I'm just asking a question. I'm trying to figure out what was done before.
No. Something had blown out in the way that, like, the air was coming into my car.
Like a vacuum leak?
It was like... I smelled like gas when I would, and it was like getting really bad gas mileage and stuff.
Do you have a receipt?
Not on me.
Oh, okay.
But it's just this weird thing when I idle, it like kind of lurches forward.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it would if I was in park.
Does the car have a tachometer?
A tachometer?
Measures RPM?
Yeah.
Okay, what does that needle do?
Needle goes up.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, there may be a problem with the idle speed motor.
Okay.
Do you have times where it idles? You mentioned sometimes it does idle too high.
Yes.
Even when warm.
Yes.
Okay. I would focus on that.
Okay.
That idle speed motor may be doing some weird things for whatever reason. It may be being told to do that, or it may just be sticking.
Okay, so the idle speed motor
right. Is
something to have checked.
Do you know what that looks like?
I do not, but, I mean, I would probably take it in. I'm not probably going to check it out myself.
Oh, okay, because the reason I mention it is a lot of the Ford products, when the idle speed motor sticks, you lift the hood up and you just tap on the motor with a little hammer or a screwdriver handle, and then immediately the idle comes down.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I got to jump in here. I'm really sorry. I hope that at least gives the caller a place to start. We got to leave it there.
Okay.
Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Hey, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you. Have a good day.